Pogarty.
Hey, Ben, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Good, good, good. I have sent you a picture.
You did send me a picture.
That is, okay, so here's what happened. I was asleep this morning, and Betty came in like she normally does, because we keep, there's a chest of drawers with her clothes in it, and for some reason we keep it in our room.
Okay.
I think there's not enough room in her room or whatever. So anyway, she comes in here to get her clothes in the morning,
all right.
Which is great because I don't need an alarm clock because she wakes me up every morning. So she woke, got in and I woke up. I went back to sleep. And I went back to sleep for maybe 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I woke up and I rushed to get a pen and a piece of paper because I had a dream that I was reading a comic that I had written. And normally in dreams like this, I then forget what it was that I was working on. And I'm like, oh man, if only I could remember. And I'm looking at this comic that I'm drawing and I'm like, oh man, this is such a good comic. I hope I don't forget it. And then I was like, wait a second, I'm dreaming this right now. I better wake up and draw it. So I woke up and I drew it.
And that's what
and,
you sent me.
And it's, yes, it's the ghost Neanderthal.
And he's waving hello.
He's nice, but he's a Neanderthal who's a ghost. And he, basically, the idea I have is that he's still bopping around this world. But he's not exactly a Neanderthal, just like a ghost isn't exactly a person. He might know more than a Neanderthal would, but he's confused and intrigued by the world around him. That's the idea anyway.
Crazy.
I don't know if anything's going to come of it, but he's really cute, I think. He's a cute little guy.
Yeah,
and
Froggy Pants should get together.
Oh, yeah, Froggy Pants. Oh, my gosh, I forgot about Froggy Pants. If you can believe it.
Yeah.
It's true.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, let's get this out of the way. There are no corrections.
Okay.
But not because Jennifer didn't listen to the episode. She just said that there really wasn't anything that stood out. The only thing that she mentioned was... Okay, so... For those of you who, for some reason, are starting on this episode, I don't get it, but more power to you.
They just thought they'd dive in randomly and see if any of the other episodes are worth listening to.
Exactly, yeah. They must know what they're doing by this point.
Right.
I have made a pact with Ben, and we have stuck to it, pretty much, that we won't look anything up during the show.
Right.
We're going to guess, we're going to use our brains, we're going to try to do it, and we won't really look anything up before the show either, if right. we're going to be honest about
this
it.
This is all unplanned, in case you haven't figured that out yet.
But my wife, Jennifer, we call her Jennifer Fact Checker, she listens to the podcast and then sends us emails if we get something wrong, which you at home can do as well. It's Ben's email at yahoo.com at gmail.com.
Yeah.
So the one thing she said, we weren't sure who had directed Duel of the Linguist Mages.
Oh, right, yeah.
If it was Christina or if it was Scotto, it was Scotto, apparently.
Okay.
Is the information that I have.
Should have figured that part out.
Yeah, also, and she said it wasn't really... Because he normally directs his stuff, I think.
Yeah, it was sort of a, you know, I think... Well, I don't know how he and Christina worked it out, but it seemed like they alternated his plays. So, like, she would direct one and he would direct one.
Oh, okay.
That's just how it felt to me. Yeah. I also... Well, yeah. I mean, I have a correction, too.
Ooh.
Last week, I think I may have said that we only have one listener, and our second listener emailed Ben's email at yahoo.com, at gmail.com. And that second listener is, of course, Stephen McCandless.
So
we can't forget that we have two listeners.
They have two uses. Remember that? From Mr. Show?
Yes.
There is it's some sort of electrode kind of thing. And they have two uses. It's pretty cute. Two little girls saying it has two uses. It stuck in my head for some reason.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff that stick in my head from Mr. Show. I saw it at a very impressionable age, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, when if someone mentions Mr. Show to me, the first line that pops into my head is "Pan kisses you, kiss the pan."
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Mine is "What are you doing here?" Or it's something like that.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I don't know anymore.
No, it is. What
is
are
it
you doing?
Who let
here?
You in here?
Yeah, something
or
like that.
Or what are you doing here? Oh my gosh. You shouldn't listen to Pans and you shouldn't listen to British people.
Only British people can fly.
I want to watch all those things now.
It won't take long. Oh, there's only three seasons.
And I want to see if there's another... I wonder if Better Call Saul, if new episodes are up yet.
I think I know. I heard they were filming, and I have to correct myself just now. I think there are fourth seasons. The only reason I think there are three seasons of Mr. Show is because seasons one and two are on the same DVD.
Yeah. Well, and then, of course, there's, what is it, With Bob and David?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't counting.
Which Netflix
did? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of count
it.
It's sort of similar. Yeah.
It's kind of, I consider it canon.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't wait for Better Call Saul to come back. That's like one of the few TV shows that I make a point to watch.
Okay. Spoilers for Better Call Saul. Can you remember what the last thing that happened?
The last part of the last episode? Yeah.
Yeah. What was it?
Do you want me to tell you? So.
Yeah.
Jimmy just got cleared, or Jimmy had given like an impassioned speech about Chuck, and he's meeting Kim in the hallway of the courthouse, and Kim's kind of choked up because she's like, I can't believe, I just saw this emotion from you. But Jimmy totally flips a 180 and he's like, can you believe they bought everything I said? And then like some gal comes up, some like clerk comes up and says, come on, come on, Jimmy, we got to, get you to sign your papers to become a lawyer again. And he's like, that's great, but can I do it under a different name? And she's like, yeah. And Kim is like, Jimmy, what are you doing? And he turns around and he goes, it's all good, man. And he walks down the hall, and there's like a single on Kim as she's just like discover that Jimmy is now a completely different person. Blackout. End of
okay.
episode.
So, yeah, I don't think I've seen that season.
Jesus.
So I may have an entire thing for me. Look, here's the thing.
Why did you let me tell you that?
And I'm serious about it. Cool, because it sounded like something I knew at first.
You, but, the okay, person so, who avoids spoilers like the plague.
What's the one where Jimmy is, where he is?
Spoilers for like the last season of Better Call Saul, by the way.
Yeah, Chuck loses it on the stand. What season is that?
That's the second to last season. That season ends with Chuck's house on fire.
Yeah, okay, so that's the last thing I've seen.
Okay.
So
Jesus.
So yeah, it's a good enough show that I like the execute. I can watch that one. Jennifer put something in my head about this that I really think is true. You know how Hamlet's going to end.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody's seen how Hamlet goes. So why do people still watch it? And it's because, the performances are good and, all that kind of stuff. So the same sort of thing. If it needs a... My point is that, order of execution kind of matters. Otherwise, why do you tell the punchline last? And you know what I mean?
Right.
There's a crafting of language and all that. But she has another point, which I like, which is, even if you know the ending to the joke, it sometimes is good if the person telling it is good. The only thing that a lack of spoilers does is it blinds you to whether or not the person's any good.
Well, it's
like a surprise ending is a trick.
One of the, I mean, so in terms of Better Call Saul, like we all know that Jimmy is going to turn into Saul Goodman at some point. And,
yeah.
You know, the journey.
And that's exactly.
Is, yeah. The journey is finding out how he does it along the way. It's, you know, it's the Columbo way to do things, because at the beginning of every episode of Columbo, you knew who murdered whatever person, right? You knew
who did
it.
That's a very good point. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so the joy of the show was watching Columbo figure it out along the way.
I kind of missed out on Columbo. I need to start watching more episodes of that at some point in time, I think. Speaking of more episodes of that, have I told you about Sapphire and Steel?
If you have, I've forgotten.
Sapphire and Steel, it's on Amazon Prime right now. It's like a sort of a contemporary to Doctor Who a little bit. The woman who plays Patsy on Absolutely Fabulous.
Yes.
And the guy who played the Russian guy in The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
I never saw it.
They are some sort of mystical being who investigate ghosts, kind of, which are echoes in time. And okay. It is bizarre as all get out. I found out about it while trying to find out the name of that movie that I can't figure out, and I still can't figure it out. It's very frustrating. But yeah. So Sapphire and Steel, it's called.
Starring Joanna Lumley, who plays Patsy, and someone else who I don't know.
That's right. That's exactly who it is. And it's funny, she has aged, but she looks like herself. Very much so.
I think that was probably like the point of Absolutely Fabulous. I think she and Edwina, was that the other character's name?
Yeah.
I think, you know, they were like these hard drinking, hard partying London girls. They were probably in their mid to late 20s when they were filming that show, but made up to look like they were so much older.
Oh, so no. Well, this is what I'm saying is that
aged into what people think she looks like.
That when she's in Sapphire and Steel, right? She is. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But what I mean by that is that I think she's in her 20s then. And Absolutely Fabulous was way later. Unless I'm wrong about it
Sapphire
being
and
way
Steel
later.
Is an old show.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, yes.
I did not know that. I thought that was a new show.
No. This is a very old show. Like, 70s.
Well, then, never mind.
But it, to your point, you know, she really, like, she's... It's hard for me to divorce her from her character in Absolutely Fabulous, because she's so good at it.
Right.
So
she was in a movie too. I can't remember what she or another TV show that where she it was a her character was just completely different from that she played.
Oh,
on Absolutely Fabulous. I wish I could remember what it was. Riveting storytelling here. Right, A+ storytelling for me.
I wish I could remember what it was, the Paul Goody, Ben Lawrence podcast.
Just an hour of us going, you remember? Oh, man, I wish I could remember that one thing. Do you remember that one thing? Dang it. Probably should have looked that up before we started recording.
Exactly, yes. The other thing I've been doing, a couple things. I stopped playing Grand Theft Auto. It was making me too tense.
I didn't realize you were playing it.
Oh, yeah. I downloaded it and was playing it live, in fact, like with other people and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's kind of great because other games, if somebody's messing with you, it's annoying. But in Grand Theft Auto, it's like, this is why we're all here, to ruin each other's lives.
That was,
Let's do it.
The only console that I have is an original Nintendo Wii, And for the longest time, my favorite thing to do was to play Mario Kart late at night with people from around the world. And so, you know,
it is fun.
And then Nintendo had to go and like make newer, better consoles, and they shut down the cooperative play server for the original Wii. So I got to tell you, it's been a while since I've even turned that game on.
So, I stopped playing that. The game that I'm playing again is Dishonored 2, which I never finished. So it's kind of fun. But Dishonored is a great game because you have so many different ways to accomplish the tasks set before you. It's truly, you know, open.
Right.
In a lot of ways.
It's a sandbox.
It's not a sandbox. There's got to be a way to describe it. It's not a sandbox. Like, you can't go everywhere. You have different places that you have to go through, right? But each of those places you go through, you have a lot of freedom. So I don't know what to call that exactly.
It's a choose-your-own-adventure game.
Yeah. So, sort of. I mean, all games are a choose-your-own-adventure game a little bit, I guess. But the thing is, like, there's a guard, right? You can kill the guard. You can put the guard to sleep. You can sneak past the guard. You can do all these different ways of getting around the guard. And then what you do there affects the next thing. And it all comes down to this, Ben. I'm really into the concept of quantum computing right now.
Right.
I'm not great about it, but we talked about, I think, a little bit the quantum computer and the way it moves.
We did.
Backwards and all that. So getting more into it, there's a guy who's described how quantum computing really works. He's one of the guys who makes them. And it is like the most freaky science fiction thing I've heard. And what he said is basically this. When you have your zero and then your superposition, what you have in fact is not a superposition, but you have accessed another dimension that has a one and another dimension that has a zero, and you basically have, you've multiplied the number of computers that you have. And the more of these qubits you have in superposition, the more of these things you have. I'm making gestures with my hands. But the basic idea is that, you know, you multiply your computing power exponentially.
Right.
And then as the waveforms start collapsing, then, you know, you come back and then you finish it. And of course. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say. Okay, go ahead. And of course what?
The best way for me to figure this out is there's a game that IBM made to teach people kind of how these things work, which is great. But then the other thing is that there's a programming language for programming in this, and I'm going to start looking into it. That's all.
So I've not looked into, quantum computing quantum computing theory. My question is all of this theoretical, or are there real-world applications for this?
Okay, there are. So in 2013, which is when this conference I watched happened, and this speech at this concert.
Was it like a TED Talk or something?
Yeah, sort of like it. So the guy, he was one of the people that manufactured these things, said that there are two main quantum computers right now. One is in Southern California and one is in NASA. Google made it. So they exist. In 2013, the way that they worked, there are these huge refrigeration units that make these really, 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 really super cold conditions for these things to run in.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had pictures of it all. He didn't get into
how they work. He just got it. I mean, how they work physically, he just worked, you know, what they do, basically. That was what his main discussion point was. So it's pretty, yeah, it's they exist. They are out there.
So it's just that the computing power is exponentially more, you know, powerful than what we have today.
Well, it's not necessarily more powerful, and this is the big thing that he stressed, and I like this analogy a lot. At the time that the Wright brothers flew their airplane, right?
Yeah.
A horse could outrun the airplane.
Right.
But the Wright brothers weren't trying to build a better horse. The Wright brothers were giving, you know, technology a new capability that didn't have before.
Right.
So if all you care about is speed, you know, the horse is going to be better at that time, but, you know, the potential for flight is something that a horse cannot achieve. And then he said, at least not horses we know about, which I thought was a really interesting aside. But so yeah, these things do exist. And of course, yeah, and obviously the one that the Russians used didn't exist, or he didn't know about it anyway in 2013 when he gave this talk.
Right. Because that was a relatively recent news story.
So, yeah, it's pretty exciting. I mean, I get it, at least at that philosophical level. Now, whether or not, you know, I'd have to see the practical way that the programming things work. But it's still pretty cool.
What language does it use? Is it a brand new quantum computing language? I take it's not just like a subset of C++.
Here's the thing. The thing that is supposed to teach you how to program in it, I just downloaded it, so I don't know.
Ah.
But I doubt it's... I assume it's its own language. But I don't know for sure. The other thing that a friend of mine at work told me about, which is pretty cool, is that there are quantum computer emulators that you can actually use in real time.
Cool.
And basically, the way that they work is that the quantum computers exist, right?
Yeah.
And much like you can network into a mainframe somewhere or whatever, you can get something that interfaces with one in some way. I don't know exactly how it works. But the thing that he mentioned that is really cool is that they have something called real-time feedback. And the basic idea is that the program is constantly running. And as you change variables, you can see immediately how that changes the program, which I find interesting. I don't know exactly how it works. But the one thing that this other guy who did the lecture talked about is that people are going to be using quantum computing to make artificial intelligence better.
Right.
Like the two things will feed upon each other, and he...
Oh, good. We can mark the birth of Skynet now.
Yeah, exactly. He had sort of a doom and gloom suggestion that, and this is what he said, by, I think it was 2030 or something like that, artificial intelligence is going to be better at us than us at everything. And I'm not just talking about better at calculation or better determining, you know, ratios between, I mean, everything.
Right.
So that's great.
Yeah.
Man, I'll tell you what, I wouldn't mind just, you know, so what you're doing is you're just, you know, you're at work, if you are at work, maybe work doesn't exist anymore, but there's just a artificial intelligence comedian that's coming up with all sorts of different jokes that are just hilarious. Eventually you'd probably die laughing.
Well, I mean, and these jokes are going to be tailored to your specific sense of humor because information will have been gathered about you. For instance, information, like decisions you make when playing Grand Theft Auto, not Grand Theft Auto, but Uncharted, Undocumented. What was that game you were talking about?
Dishonored.
Dishonored. Yeah, all of your decisions are being cataloged and analyzed, and so the AI stand-up comedian is going to know exactly what kind of humor that you like.
And without getting too far into it, I believe somebody posited this sort of game theory thought experiment kind of thing. You might have heard of it before. I'm not sure. I'm going to give you two boxes. I'm specifically not telling the thing exactly correct.
Okay.
I don't think. At least not as correct as I heard it. I'm going to give you two boxes.
Two boxes.
In one box. Yep. Two boxes. In one box, there's going to be $100.
Okay.
And I'm pointing to the box that has $100. And I say, this box has $1 million in it, but it only has $1 million in it if you tell me if you're going to open the box. And if you're not going to open the box, it doesn't have anything in it.
Okay.
So you open, you know, so if you open that box, there will be $1 million in it. But if you don't open the box, there won't be.
Okay.
And so all that you're trying to do is figuring out, can I predict what it is you're going to do? Right?
Yeah.
And the concept, and this all goes back to simulation theory. The concept is that perhaps at some point in time, you know, you have been presented with a decision like this. Right? Someone wants to know with 100% certainty if you're going to open that box or not.
Right.
It could be anything. Someone's going to want to know with 100% certainty if you are going to like a new flavor blasted Doritos or whatever. And so what they'll do is they'll make a simulation and it will be Ben, and it will, you know, they'll draw on all of your history, information, all that, yeah. Build a model of you. Raise you from an infant to the time when you're in that grocery store and see which of the two chips that you choose, and whichever one you choose, well, maybe that's the end of it, right? The reason I bring this up, Ben, there is a radio program called The Tunnel Under the World.
The Tunnel Under the World.
And the Tunnel Under the World, spoilers for 1940s radio show or whatever came out.
I don't know. Tunnel I haven't Under seen the it World. Yet. Am I gonna not like these spoilers? I haven't heard it.
Is,
I haven't
this is
to it.
A huge. This is a huge spoiler. Are you gonna listen to it? Because I can wait, and we can talk about it next time.
No, just tell me what it is.
Okay, this guy is having this weird thing where his. Where time is working weird, his memory is working weird, he doesn't get it, right?
Yeah.
And in the end, it turns out that he is just a tiny guy. They've shrunk him down. He's a miniature guy living over his life over and over and over again for marketing purposes.
Yeah. Yeah. That
I there, think...
There, I mean, I can see that... in the future, you know, in as little in as, you know, 11 years, you know, 20 years from now, there's going to be marketing execs who will do exactly what you say, who will recreate an individual based on their likes and dislikes and run that person through a simulation millions of times to see what brand of dish soap they want to buy. What draws
exactly?
What draws?
And how
what,
to get them?
Yeah, what kind of packaging they're drawn to? That kind of thing.
Exactly. Yes. Of there course, that, there's
there,
the.
There was
sorry.
The,
go ahead.
There was a Black Mirror episode where they did the same kind of thing, but it was for relationships.
Oh.
They you know there was like a. they ran a simulation of two people to see if they would get together. And like if in like the real world, if the simulations got together, you know, like 98% of the time, then you were matched with somebody.
Uh-huh. Hey, speaking of but first I want to say one thing. There is the other horrible idea.
Well, all of these are horrible ideas.
I don't know. That one's not so bad. But if someone is able to instead run you, Ben Lawrence specifically, right, through hypnosis or whatever.
Yeah.
And they make you relive your life over and over again until you choose the one brand that they sell. You get kidnapped by Pepsi. And they try to recreate. This goes back to my whole slideshow thing. Remember, Ben? Remember that vacation when you enjoyed a Pepsi with your family? No, it was Coca-Cola. Are you sure, Ben? You know, that kind of thing.
Think again. It's possible. Think again.
Oh, but speaking of relationships, I want to say I finally watched The Lobster.
Okay.
Haven't seen it. Have you heard about it? Oh, okay. I really liked it. It was weird, and I found out that the guy who directed it was the same guy who directed another movie that I really like that not many people do called Dogtooth.
Haven't heard of that one either.
Yeah, Dogtooth was a movie I chose for date night one time with me and Jennifer, and she let me know that was not a great choice because it's... Well, I don't.
Did
wanna,
she watch?
No spoilers.
Did she watch the whole movie, or did she leave in the middle?
I think she didn't watch
did
all
she
of it.
Declare that it was a terrible movie and storm out of the room.
I don't think she necessarily stormed out of the room. It may be that we watched it all the way through, and then she looked at me and said, "Why did you pick that one? I was waiting for it to get. I seem to remember that." But
waiting for
it may be that she stopped it.
I'm gonna go see Captain Marvel tonight. Have you seen that yet?
Oh no, I haven't. But I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah,
I may not see it in theaters. Us is coming out tomorrow.
Oh yeah,
I'm looking forward to that
too.
The
new Jordan Peele movie.
Yep. Both those movies are movies I'm interested in. Yeah. Here's the thing. I've been really interested in the Skrulls, for a while.
Yeah.
It's kind of the the Marvel version of lizard people in a way. I hear that obviously the de-aging of,
Sam Jackson.
Yeah. It's supposed to be pretty awesome.
Well, here's the thing. I didn't know that they like de-aged him like they de-aged Michael Douglas in Ant-Man or Robert Downey Jr. in, what was it, like just Avengers or Iron Man 3 or something. But anyway.
For one of the Avengers. And also.
One of the Avengers.
What's his head? Kurt Russell in Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, so I've seen the trailer for Captain Marvel, and I've seen pictures of Samuel L. Jackson, and I honestly just thought, oh, okay, well, you know, they put some hair on him. Otherwise, he looks like Samuel L. Jackson.
He totally does. And exactly I think that's Samuel L. Jackson, you know, for you.
Yeah.
You know, that's him. You know, really, honestly... kind of ageless.
They put a picture of somebody online put a picture of Samuel L. Jackson from like 1995. I think it was from Jurassic Park.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
And his de-aging, and yeah, they look, you know, very, very similar.
Well, obviously, but where do you think they got?
Hopefully, hopefully it's not distracting, because when you're watching, and I'm sure it's gotten better. But
I don't think, and that's the thing is, I don't think, I wish they hadn't said anything, because I bet you I wouldn't have noticed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like in Blade Runner, when they put Sean Young's face, a young Sean Young's face on a different actor, you could still tell a little bit, you know, it's I mean, but the technology has come further than when
it's going to be nuts in like,
yeah, like when they made Grand Moff Tarkin in Rogue One, that was very distracting. Yeah. But
so here's something I will say. There is a website called This Person Does Not Exist.
Okay. .com.
It is full of
I've seen this. Yeah.
Yeah. Now the tip that I have for you, Ben, because this is something I've noticed as well. You look at their eyes and their teeth and their ears.
Yeah.
And you'll lots of times be able to tell that there's something weird going on.
I remember like when I heard about this website, I was clicking through and there was some anomaly. There was something. It wasn't like the person looked like an alien, but there was definitely a bug in the system. And it might not have been with the face. It might have been with the background. But
That's another thing too. Like features of the background somehow make their way into the person's hair.
Yeah.
Is an example. Also,
it's crazy though.
The hair sometimes encroaches upon, you know, something else. But the main thing is that as the technology gets better, one of the great things about humans, we also like start noticing things that, like for instance, the Ray Harryhausen stuff, right?
Yeah.
When we were kids, or at least when I was a kid, it was really cool, and there was something weird about it, but I couldn't really say. Now I know, you know, it's frame rates and, right, you know, that kind of thing. The same way, if I'm at my parents' house and they have motion smoothing on their TV, or, you know, it's the wrong aspect ratio or whatever, I can tell, but they can't necessarily.
So they built this. Remind me to tell you about my Star Wars Solo, a Star Wars story theory.
Oh, tell me now. Tell me now.
Okay, so I might have mentioned this before, but I think when facial replacement technology in movies gets better, Disney is going to re-release Solo, a Star Wars story, but they're going to replace Alden Ehrenreich's face with a young Harrison Ford and synthesize a young Harrison Ford's voice and replace his dialogue.
I think it is very possible
and
that
so,
they did that. Yes.
And the second part of this is they're going to go through and replace Billy Dee Williams in A New Hope with with a Donald Glover.
Whoever has more star power
exactly
that's is just the one who ends up being
whatever think, Disney wants
yeah,
to do.
Yeah, yeah.
But going back
that,
to...
That totally makes sense.
Going back to motion smoothing, somebody in the apartment across the street from me has a really big television set, and it's facing the window, and so I can see what they're watching. And they were watching one of the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies recently, and they had motion smoothing on, and I could tell from here. And it was making me angry.
It is really weird how bad motion smoothing makes things look for some reason. And I think it's that we've trained ourselves to see.
Steven actually had a really good point, because I posted about this on Facebook. And Steven mentioned that if your TV is creating 60 frames a second off of a 24-second source, your television is creating more of the movie than the studio.
That's a really good point.
Let that sink in, America.
Now, the one thing that I think this frame rate will be good for is VR stuff.
Right. Well, I mean, Vsauce did a video on the frame rate that humans can see things.
Say again?
So there's this channel on YouTube called Vsauce. There's a number of it's like a whole thing now, but one of the videos which I've watched like, you know, years ago, I don't remember the conclusion they came to, but they did an experiment on the frame rate that people see, right?
Okay,
you know, what's your vision frame rate? And I don't know if it's what their definite conclusion was, but I want to say that it wasn't even, you know, conclusive.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, but yeah, no. Well, high frame rate, like 160 hertz, 120 frame rate, 120 frames a second frame rate is good for VR because it's, you know, it's the most realistic. Yes, no, maybe.
Yeah, I mean that's the idea, is that you want it. That's the time when you want to be able to go, oh well, I can't tell at all. You know what I mean?
But it's still weird because, like, I'm playing with this new camera, and the viewfinder has a 60-second default frame rate. And so until you switch it to, like, a 24 or 23.98 frame rate, it's got, you know, the 60 frame rate on the viewfinder, and it just looks fake. It doesn't look like I'm looking through a window. It looks fake. So I don't know if a VR headset playing at 60 frames a second, is it going to feel like being inside of a soap opera, or is it going to feel like being inside a natural environment?
I think, at least from my own perspective, the head tracking changes things a lot. Yep. Like if you have head tracking, it's more real depending on, you know, I'll give you a super example. This isn't about frame rate, unfortunately. This is about resolution, but it's still the same. The resolution of the PSVR is less than the television, right? So when I put on the PSVR, I'm already losing,
you're losing pixels.
Whatever you call it. Yeah, I'm losing pixels. But what my brain does is my brain actually thinks that there is a really high resolution screen that there's just some gauze over. And my brain actually sort of recreates
somebody gets
this
that gauze
better
out of
picture
here.
Every time I move my head. Right? Does that make sense? Because I'm moving my head and I'm looking at all these different places and stuff like that.
Yeah.
My brain, like when you look through a screen and a window, right? It kind of pixelates what you're looking at.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like but you know that there's a world behind it. And when you move your head around, the screen sort of goes away. The screen on the window kind of goes away, and you just see what's behind it, right?
Okay. Because
you're getting enough information past the screen that it's almost like it's not there anymore. It's still there, but you kind of ignore it.
I'm wondering if that's something to do with how the headset is generating new pixels. Like if it's just a static shot, then it can save energy by not drawing each pixel. But then when things are changing, when you're moving, then it has to like create new information constantly.
So there's a whole bunch of
I'm sure there's a whole bunch of science going on there that I don't understand and can't even comprehend at this point.
Well, I watched a thing about VR, and there's a problem with VR for programmers and for hardware and stuff like that. And that's that when the normal video game, 2D video game, is being made, you only have to do, like, if I'm looking at this refrigerator, right?
Yeah.
In the video game, I only have to render the front and the side of it.
Yeah.
The rest of it can be blank.
You know the point of view of the viewer.
Right, exactly. And as I move, then, you know, they can add more of it. And they don't have a good way to stop that from happening, at least right now. Especially if it's a multiplayer thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we get quantum computers to generate VR environments, I'm sure they will have no problems.
Well, I'll tell you, on this podcast, this is going to be very famous at some point in time, Ben. I will tell you that, in my opinion, the thing that's going to be an aspect of quantum gaming is that the more attention you pay to a certain aspect of the game that you're in, the more detailed it's going to become.
Yeah, I can see that.
So, yeah, like, none of the books are going to have any information until you pull the book from the shelf, and then it will have more information.
Right.
It'll have a title and everything like that. And then when you open it and start reading it, so you could, hypothetically, in a future game, force the game to write an entire novel if you pull the book and start reading it.
Yep.
Because then it's like, okay, well, this is, in my opinion, video games of the future are going to be a whole bunch of mini games all strewn together. It's kind of what lots of games are now, anyway.
I think the video games of the future, when it's all virtual, are going to be recreations of your mundane daily life with maybe just slight modifications.
I've used this as an example with other people before, but I'll tell you, the idea that you and I are some, you know, strange trans-dimensional beings, and we're in the equivalent of a video store, and we're looking through a whole bunch of different, and they're people, right? They're just pictures of people with names on it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I pick Paul Goody, and you pick Ben Lawrence, and I go, well, what about these guys? They hang out, and it's kind of fun.
Sure,
well,
let's give that a shot.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what we're doing right now, is we're these guys playing through this thing. And let me just ask you, Ben, how's it going so far?
Well, I don't know if I've hit another save point, so if things go terribly wrong for me, I might have to start back at the beginning.
Hey, that's another thing. I love... when people say, what superpower do you want? Save point, man. That's the ultimate, I think. But here's the problem.
The ability to jump between save points.
Well, here's the thing. We got screwed because the problem is that our memory of what happened before the save point isn't there. Right?
Oh, jeez.
We just... So maybe we are dying all the time and getting reborn, and we forget about it because the memory aspect, we didn't think about asking for it. So we just live our entire lives from birth to death. Had we the foreknowledge, we would have been able to make, like, all these different choices and all that. And maybe we do. Ooh, Ben... The times when you get a hunch and you're like, oh, maybe I shouldn't do that thing. Maybe that's the few couple times that you've been able to, like,
I think, you know what, remember. I think save points are add-on downloadable content that you have to pay extra for that we just can't afford.
Exactly. That's possible. And the people who can't afford it, that's the other thing that I thought about. Rich people... You know, are the people that buy the downloadable content.
Yeah.
You can get it in game if you try really hard, but a lot of people just, you know. Although I will say, Ben, and this is, you know, I'm full of honesty today for whatever reason. I paid a little extra with Grand Theft Auto 5 so I could get some of the cool stuff.
All right.
And it was nice. I was like, this is worth it.
Nicer car or better clothes or like cheat codes or what'd you pay for?
I paid for more money so that I could like, you know,
you bought
buy
money.
Stuff. I bought money and I got a couple of different hideouts and bases and stuff like that. It was cool. Worth it, but now I'm not playing it, so
well, there you go.
Take that sunk cost fallacy.
I spend money on things when at the time feels really important, but afterwards I'm like, why did I do that?
Yeah, well, and there you go. That's your future self warning you.
Exactly.
When you're about to pay for something and you're like, oh, is this a good idea?
Think about this for a sec.
Yeah. Oh, hey, Ben, we're getting close to the end here, but let me talk about Myers-Briggs for a second. Are you familiar with it?
With what? Oh, Myers-Briggs?
Yeah.
I know what it is, but I don't know what my personality is.
So here's the thing. I took it. I know what my personality is. I'm not going to talk about that too much, and I'll explain why in just a second. But first of all, one of the things is that it actually put me as an introvert rather than an extrovert, which I thought was surprising.
Okay.
Until I realized, if you think about it, right? Spin the bottles, stuff like that. I would go and do it. And then what would I do most of the time? I would go home after that. I wouldn't really hang out too much.
Well, that was mostly due to your situation and not so much that you didn't want to.
Oh, is it though?
You either had been up for a long time or needed to get up early, or you know, you had circumstance.
When I was doing improv here, I didn't have any of those responsibilities and I still didn't do it. when I'm at, you know, work has all these different things I don't do that often. I like to spend time at home reading and playing video games and stuff like that.
Maybe you're just a misanthrope.
Oh,
you're an extroverted misanthrope.
It's possible. Or, and this is what I think, I've learned over time that being an extrovert helps in some ways. And I have gotten some of that behavior going. But, okay, so here's the thing.
Yeah.
Lots of people don't like Myers-Briggs. And I get it. I totally get it. It became a buzzword and a, you know, like corporation can make it weird.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't like it because it was forced upon them by their job.
Yeah, exactly. And I never had that. So maybe that's why I find it interesting. But here's the thing that I like a lot. I talked to a friend of mine at work about it. And I said, hey, have you heard about this? And he goes, yeah, you mean like how it's all bullshit and, you know. And I was like, whoa, okay, well. And then I asked him this question. I said, I definitely remember what my thing was because, you know, I had it drilled into me and all this. It's this. And I said, how many times do you take the test? He said, oh, you know, like three or four. I'm like, and you always get the same thing? He's like, yeah. Okay. If you can take it over and over again and still get the same thing.
That's the definition of insanity.
It may no. Or is it? No, it may not be. It may not be everything that the people who adhere to it say, but that is, in my opinion, it means that it's actually testing something. It's not just cold reading. You know what I mean? It's
I've never taken the quiz. Is this person just answering the same set of questions over and over?
Well, that's the thing, is it is pretty much the same set of questions. So yeah, you would think, okay, well yeah, if you get these answers, you have this as your, but that's still to me, you know, significant, I guess.
Yeah.
Because if nothing else, you know, a person who has this, like, okay, let's say, and this is not how it works, but let's just say, I'm giving you multiple choice questions and you're picking answers, right?
Yeah.
It's like, which Hogwarts house are you or whatever.
Right.
You know, there's an A answer, a B answer, a D answer, and a C answer.
In that order.
And why does D come before C? I don't know. but the basic thing is that, if you're 75%, if I say, you're 50% D, which means that you're a D, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that you answer D 50% of the time. That's not what this test is. You know what I mean? It's got, everything is strongly agree, strongly disagree, or somewhere in the middle.
Right.
And Jesus. All of that stuff as a spectrum puts you in certain categories, right? which is that, you know, there are four different things, four, you know, varying degrees. So it's like you're taking four Hogwarts tests. Okay, I'm sorry. This is not making as much sense as I thought it was when I started out. But the basic thing is that if nothing else, the test is an indicator of how you would answer the test. We can all agree on that. That if nothing else, the test is reliable in that you took the test and you got these answers, you took the test and you got these answers, you are, in general, going to answer these answers, and the test will know kind of what you're going to answer. And that is significant, I think.
Is there one set of questions in this test? I assumed that your friend from work kept getting the same things because he kept taking the same test. Or is
the same test
like when
given
you...
by different people, because he had been at a couple different jobs that had...
So there are different sets of questions that are answered. Because, you know, when you take a Hogwarts test, you know, on different websites, you're answering different sets of questions. And they, you know, they put you in a bucket depending on, you know, the types of answers that you give. But you are, for these different sites, you are taking a different test. But if you're taking the, you know, Myers-Briggs trademark test at one job versus another job, are you answering the same set of questions?
And I would say that if you're not answering the exact same set of questions, you're answering here's the thing. I could take a Myers-Briggs test and get pretty much any of the answers, any of the roles or whatever that I wanted to.
Yeah.
And that was the thing, is that I was at one point in time taking the test based on how I saw myself.
Right.
And this is the first time, this is why I brought it up to my friend in the first place. This is the first time that I've taken it and really thought about the answers and really answered honestly. So the example, I don't mind being the center of attention. That is true, right? But it's true up until a point. Acting and being in theater and all that, that's my choice to go on stage and do those things.
Right. But is that also the exact wording of the question? I don't mind being the center of attention?
No, I'm sorry. That's me.
All right. Because that's a different question than I like being the center of attention.
Right, exactly. But okay, so here is one question. I tend to sit to the side of the room rather than in the center. And I do tend to sit at the side of the room rather than at the center.
Right, yeah.
But that puts you as an introvert rather than an extrovert.
You will often find me on the edge in a group picture
as opposed
to in the middle.
And that's the thing, is that I think you and I are both kind of introverted people.
Oh, yeah.
But
I'm not going to deny that.
But then again, you know, that's within our peer group, which is mostly extroverts, I think.
Yeah, it's all relative.
So yeah, anyway, but the big thing is I took it, and it's interesting. And speaking of interesting, hey, Betty!
Oh, God.
Oh, we got, like, 2 minutes. Hey, Betty, how's it going?
Hey, Betty.
Not too great.
Why? What's wrong?
Okay, so... you know that place, like, where there are a bunch of, like, run-down buildings? And, like, it seems so far away, yet it's, like, right by us?
Yes.
Well, it turns out a couple of people were living there, then a homeless guy stabbed them to death.
What?
Yeah.
That really happened?
Yeah.
Oh. Boy, oh boy.
Like somebody from your neighborhood?
Boy, oh boy.
Somebody in Edwardsville stabbed some people to death. Jennifer is nodding her head. So, and Betty, did you find out about it at school?
My friend Brennan told me.
Okay, and then Jennifer, did you fact check it and it found out that it was real?
You know the house that was at the end of that Lois Lane?
Yeah.
Lois.
Yeah.
Michael were the name of the people. So it's their house.
Wow, and they got stabbed to death. Wow.
All right. Well, on that happy note.
I'm sorry, who?
Totally random. This guy's he's in jail.
Yeah. The guy who did it was a totally random thing. The guy's in jail now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Stabbed them both to death.
And yeah, they got stabbed to death. So there you go, Ben.
You don't often hear about something like that happening in Edwardsville. That happened, I think some random person just got shot here in Seattle, but you know, we've become numb to those types of stories.
Oh, so mom got Betty Skittles, which I think is going to work out.
Right.
Yeah, so...
Helps everything.
Because Skittles fix everything.
Skittles fix everything. Hey, speaking of fixing everything, hey, Jennifer.
What?
So, Ben, I told you that Jennifer had a medical issue that I was very cagey about it.
Yeah, she posted about it on Facebook.
Yeah, so she doesn't have cancer.
Hooray!
Yes, I have breast cancer. I don't.
Yeah. So
I just have lumpy lymph nodes.
Lumpy lymph nodes.
And a high-risk tumor that they're going to remove.
And they're going to remove a high-risk tumor.
It's benign.
It's benign.
Hooray! I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yay. So that's no ending cancer. On a good note.
Yay.
See, now everything's happy again. And we won't talk about that other thing. All right.
Somebody got murdered.
Oh, my God.
Jeez.
Ben, I invite you to keep it wrong.
Actually, two people got murdered.
Oh, no. Okay.
Keep it wrong. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks. Speaking of keeping it wrong, hey, yes. Buddy. All right.
All right.
Talk to you later. All right. Yep. Bye.
Bye.